Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
Electricity is a huge cost line in any household. I haven't and I will not take you into the dark corners of how in July, winter pricing, I somehow found myself with a 13,000 Rand bill from Eskom when I normally pay 2,000 Rand a month, which is crazy. And I think the thing that Eskom is now trying to propose to Eskom is to, to NERSA, is to prevent us from having to find those kinds of surprises like I found in July. And that is most South Africans who are charged directly by Eskom, and I think most of your municipalities, if you are charged by the municipalities, have quelled this. But most South Africans who are charged by Eskom, up until the first 600 kilowatt hours that you actually do spend, you are charged a particularly low rate in order to protect what Eskom and the state feels happens to be the consumption of low-income households. If you go over 600 kilowatts per hour in any month, you get a significantly increased tariff rate on your electricity. All of this has been taken into consideration with regard to the 36% increase that Eskom has requested from NERSA. But with, I think, the political and business noise that's come in response to that request for 36%, Eskom has now come back to NERSA to say, look, how about we overhaul the way we do our tariffs? There are far more intelligent people than me in this space to help us understand what that proposal looks like. Amongst those is Adeline Chemeling. Adeline Chemeling is an energy expert who I've interviewed a number of times before. Enjoy his perspectives, and I'm very grateful for his insight tonight on Kaya Biz. Adil, welcome to Kaya Biz. Thank you so much. Help us understand exactly what it is that Eskom is trying to propose to the energy regulator.
Look, I think the Eskom is trying to get a tariff increase with regards to its current cost, as well as the spread of its bearing with regards to generation of electricity. And as you have been observing, there's been a lot of pushback, by the way, that the current tariff that Eskom is proposing is not acceptable. I think it's about 38% they want. And the customers are feeling the pinch of it, and they're currently, you know, responding back. Remember, when you do a tariff increase, or request for a tariff increase, the process must be taken on publicly by NERSA, and it must be taken onto public processes where there must be engagements and hearings, and people must do submissions as well. And on those bases, it is based on that, you know, people are finding it highly difficult now to actually afford the cost of electricity as it is, given the fact that there's not been any growth in the economy and everything. So,
There's been a huge
pushback, as we're talking about.
Absolutely. You know? So, Adam, what are they proposing now? So, what used to be the 600 kilowatt breach point or threshold, they're now trying to make 1,000 kilowatt. And how will they make that more protective for lower income families? And is it going to be more costly for higher income families and households?
Yeah, I think if you go over 1,000 kilowatts in terms of utilization, they're going to charge you in a different... They have the A and B currently tariff right now. So under the A, it's, for instance, the lower ones are below a tariff. And then there is the ones that are charged a slightly higher for consuming bigger amount of electricity. So the measure is they're looking at people who can afford, who are currently using a lot of electricity, and they're saying that these are actually high-demand customers and we're going to charge them high. But the problem is, to run a normal household, Eskom has made a fundamental error in this thing, because running a normal household in a proper normal suburban environment, you know, talking about using less than 1,000, it's actually not even realistic for it.
I was about to ask,
So
Adil, so that's the first thing that I want to say. So before we get into what is realistic, even if unrealistically, I, as a household, wanted to have 1,500 kilowatts hours of usage in a month. Isn't it crazy? And just tell me in your perspective of economics, isn't it crazy to tell a customer that spends more money on your product that I will therefore penalize you for the fact that you are buying more from me? That's what Eskom is actually saying to high usage clients. They're saying, If I sold ice cream and you wanted five ice creams instead of four ice creams, I'm going to charge you more for wanting more ice cream because you can buy more ice cream. Is that an appropriate principle to apply to the economics of electricity?
Look, it's not appropriate. I mean, the 36.15% increase in the period of 2025 and 2026, which once they get an approval, it means it has to be kicked into effect. And then the year after, they applying for 11.81%. And then the year after that, there'll be another 9.10%. Mm. They have to do a 3-year, they call it a multi, the phase application. So in this case, it does not make any sense to tell somebody who's using. Actually, they should be discounting people who are using higher.
Correct.
A rebate or even a tariff break because there's a higher consumption. But in the case of what we're seeing is the reverse penalty as well as a penalization for people who are using electricity. And we've brought this issue up several times.
Oh, you have.
Why would Eskom want to penalize people who are the big customers of Eskom? For instance, let me give you a scenario. There's a lot of aluminium as well as steel smelters in the country who are still paying the lowest tariff. They're still paying something like 20 cents. Some are paying 40 cents as we're speaking. Nobody comes and say, but this customer should be removed. Why? Because we appreciate what they're doing in the economy because they're, one, creating economic opportunities, creating jobs, and increasing investment in South Africa.
But more importantly, if I may, Adil, more importantly, they are, as a large client, they are very, they're a colluded negotiating force. So Eskom is able to increase on a disparate and non-centralized lot of South African individual consumers. But when you've got this collated and very, as I say, coordinated force that happens to be the smelters, for example, they can say, no, my negotiating power says absolutely no.
Yep.
If I may, I'm sorry, I know you're giving us a perspective, but if I may interrupt just to ask, what, in your opinion, is the appropriate pricing model for South Africa for electricity and in many respects a range of utility pricing? Because South Africa works on cost plus, but as a guest of mine actually highlighted just the other day, cost can just include all kinds of inefficiencies, extra hiring. You know, you can be a very wasteful cost creator and then just say, well, I need a cost plus tariff, which I think many South Africans feel Eskom does.
Look, the current tariff, for instance, there's two tariffs that you're paying actually as a customer for electricity in South Africa. One is the tariff that Eskom charges to the municipalities for dispensing of electricity, right? So they will bring them bulk electricity and saying for this bulk electricity as a municipality, we're charging you, say, 186 cents a tariff, okay? Right now, they're charging lower than that. So then the municipality takes that tariffs, put its own, charges and cost on top of it, and then saying, I'm going to sell it to this customer at this amount. Then you'll find your a voucher distributor, where you buy the voucher, either it's under the estate or it's under this. They then require further charges that gets added onto the tariff. So that is why certain areas are paying different rates than other people in certain areas, because the distributors of the current voucher system are charging their own additional costs on top of what they're doing. You know, so the system is not balanced as we are speaking.
Okay.
You know, it's really a rigged system where there's a lot of money being charged onto the customer at the end of the day, and there is no clear regulatory environment.
Control, where
the end of the day, I want to see my customer paying 186 cents a unit.
That sounds like 2005. That's a long time ago.
R4.5 today. I mean, I've seen certain vouchers of electricity charging R4.10.
Absolutely. So, Adil, let me ask you another question. In light of policy shifts and the assistance that government is trying to provide, in your view, what might the National Transmission Corporation of South Africa do to assist to bring that price down now that they are operating?
Look, the current transmission company, NTCFA, is not going to be able to really do much to bring in tariffs down, because remember, they are going to add on top of the existing tariff
in terms of cost.
As of next year, they are going to add their own transmission network cost.
And so was this? So was that a good idea?
The distribution company is going to add its own additional cost to it. So when we cautioned the government against this policy before, they thought that we were, as usual, people who are on the radical left and continuously complaining about policy, when we know the impediments of this process is to say, you're creating companies. Eskom had already contained this cost when it had one company which was generating, transmitting, as well as distributing. So there was no additional cost required. For now, you require a board for Eskom generation company. You require a board as well as directors, as well as employees for the current national transmission company, which is still now under Eskom, but it has to now operate as an independent entity with a whole new staff complement, with a whole new set of assets that now it must be responsible for. Whereas in the past, it was not. It was already amortized into Eskom's balance sheet as well as income. Now you go to the distribution. Now the further part of it is when you're going to see our electricity cost explode beyond affordability in the future is when the distribution comes in, when everyone who is generating electricity would be charging directly. And they would be giving their own tariffs at their own preferences according to what time of the day it is, what they are generating, the source of electricity generated from. So they have complicated the entire environment under the unbundling.
Yeah.
And it should have not been done in that sense. They should have created a parallel process to say, one, we've got the national generator of electricity, distributor, and as well as transmission company. It's Eskom.
So
now
I don't.
We've got the private entities that want access to generate and transmit electricity. We must create a second company called a proper transmission company that
why?
Will just
no.
the private companies.
Why? No. Whoa.
Yeah.
So sorry. So Adil, one of the things that I wanted to say to you is that I'm actually remembering our conversation when we spoke on the Power Spot on our little podcast with Chris Yelland and many others. And I remember now that that was one of your very firm perspectives, was that keep things as they are. Whereas I think Chris was more on the side of, you know, move towards alternatives. And you were just like, why don't we rationalize the situation as it is? You're reminding me of that. But
I remember that, Rufilo.
Yeah, that was nice. But now I'm hearing you say, well, create a whole nother entity. And it seems at odds with your earlier advice.
No.
From where we stand, okay, I understand you might have more things to say, but now I'm running out of time. So I want to ask, from where you stand today, and what we are in front of today, so you think that the NTCSA is probably superfluous? You probably think the unbundling of Eskom is superfluous? What could we do pricing or tariff-wise to limit the impact on the end consumer? What do you think?
For me, it's simple. Mm-hmm. They should not have created, one, there's multiple entities that are not necessary. That's number one, right? Because with entities, you create cost, and with cost, you create burdens in terms of your income as well as your the balance sheet. Mm-hmm. So Eskom should have not been dismantled or unbundled, should have been left intact. Then you have the criteria whereby we're saying we're introducing new independent power producers, which is the renewable companies. Give them the opportunity to come in and say, we will generate, we will have our own independent customers. Eskom, give us a charge of the current network you own to do a transmission on your network to the end customer. That's a perfect model in the real world, how every world scenario countries operate.
Is that how it works overseas, by the way? Sorry, if I may. Sorry, have you seen that happening in different countries that you might
have seen? All other countries are operating on the same model.
Okay.
It's only us who didn't do that. We actually took away from Eskom.
Why didn't we?
I think the process towards unbundling was planned wrong, wonderfully, and they didn't understand the real world scenario. They could have just taken a simple sheet where you go to China, for instance. Not all of China's electricity is produced by the state. Most of it still comes out of independent power producers.
Okay.
Right? In the power producers, the same model I'm telling you. You are an independent power producer, you don't have the last customer in terms of the network. You go to a company like the company that is owning the entire network and say, give me your tariff charge. And in this case, because the network in South Africa has already been paid for, and all we're doing under Eskom is maintaining and servicing it. to continuously. They could charge them a simple couple of cents to transmit on that network. They produce electricity, they transmit it on that network. They have an end customer client. They own the client, they own the generation. In between, the network is still managed and under ESCOM. Then you would have seen a reduction of cost, because there's no any other company that must be established and that must now start acquiring its own capital as well as having its own revenues independently and then have debts as well.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, so you already have a well-established environment where you encourage generators, independent producers, to generate, pay a small little amount for transmission, which we call wheeling. So you wheel that electricity to the end customer at the end of the day. And so, it's a small little charge they incur from ESCOM to get the electricity to their end customer. So they then own the customer, ESCOM owns the network, and then at the end of the day, all the generators compete. If ESCOM still wants to play in the generation market, it becomes a generator competing with other generators so that the price can be driven down. Remember, when there's a competition in the market and there's multiple suppliers, naturally the prices comes down because there is enough.
Well, in a free market space. So this is what I wanted to ask you next, and this is absolutely my last question to you, Adol.
Not a problem.
Okay, thank you. So now, one of the things that occurred in my little in the dinner that I had with Mteto Nyati and other business leaders ahead of inviting him onto the show, where he gave us a little bit more insight, was that he gave us a little bit of insight into, you know, so IRP introduced,
IRP 19.
Yes. IRP 19 introduced some complexities for our leaders in the energy space, which was that we kind of needed to procure, not necessarily procure, but certainly secure a sense of what kind of provision we would have for the generation of electricity in the country. I agree with you that ultimately it needs to be cost effective, it needs to be competitive, but my understanding is that in the contracts that have currently been signed for the next 20 years, certainly with the IRP, with the with the renewable kind of energy producers, they at the time, because we were under so much duress as ESCOM and as a country, they were at the time were able to price contracts well above what has now become the coal production price. So at the time, they were probably looking attractive as against the coal production price, but they are now well below what could be a coal production price now that efficiency has been put in place with the new board at ESCOM. Oh. And now we are locked into contracts for a very extended period that are at a higher price. And so this competition that you speak of will take a long time to come into place.
Not really. If you remember, this is a science of financial engineering.
Or constitutionality around contracts. That's what I'm trying to understand.
We said to government, we said Treasury must take away the current IPP burden contracts from ESCOM.
How do they do that legally?
Reminder period, they could do that because they entered it. It was not even an ESCOM requirement. It was a Treasury-based directive, policy directive, to procure IPPs because it was a offset required by the World Bank. When the World Bank was given the loan for the building of Medupi and Kusile, they said, you have to create an alternative stream of renewable energy. Wonderful. Those contracts at the time, because of the fact that it was still early stages, the tariffs were still high because the cost to establish at the time was high, right? So it does not matter. That cost for the 20 years can still be carried over, but not under the ESCOM balance sheet. You take it away from the ESCOM's tariff. Government pays for it upfront into a fund which they create and pay those IPPs for the next 20 years, by the way, off from the off-sheet balance, from the ESCOM's balance sheet, away from it. So ESCOM, when it sizes up its tariff, it does not add its long-term obligations, for instance, on their financial statements regarding the 20-year long-term contract agreements, which they are currently locked in. Remember, they are paying over 45% right now, as we're speaking, towards IPPs, out of their current income, which means they are squeezed for a lot of income, and the IPPs on the other side are not giving them the revenue that is required. They are getting about 5 to 8% of that revenue, yet they are spending almost 45% to save the current cost burden. So government should have just done what we told them. Remember, we have already laid out the solutions and plans, but the implementation of it ultimately was not taken into consideration because they didn't understand some of the fundamentals. Now they do get it, that you can remove the contract long-term obligations, which is the IPP contract, away from Eskom, put them under Treasury. They get savings properly by the state. That money is created and made sure that it funds the current IPP contracts and agreements that are within Eskom.
Okay.
Or, alternatively, they buy them off from the IPPs, and then Eskom owns them outright and requests funding from Treasury. And Treasury gives them the capital required. That is the easiest way to do it. And then we won't be suffering from this long-term tariff discussion whereby Eskom must keep on hiking prices because they are struggling with payment of certain things. This is a simple solution, but they complicate the process and they complexify the whole solution, and because they are not listening at the same time.
Adele, I'm glad that you see a solution that appears simple to you, particularly one that doesn't necessarily burden the consumer. However, in my mind, burdening the Treasury ultimately burdens the consumer. So I'm going to pause it here. Always love talking to you. We're going to need to pick this up on another day, also because my eyes are glazing over because you're getting so technical. Not because I don't love what you're saying, as always. Adeline Chabeling, energy expert.
We always get into lovely discussions.
We do. That's what I love about talking to you.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you very soon. Thank you so much, energy expert Adeline Chabeling.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.